Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Ted Vav of Malachim Bet, the 15th chapter of the second book of Kings. And in this chapter, we will see a fairly quick descent of the northern kingdom of Malchut Yisrael into its final death throes. We won't finally finish them off and see them exiled in this Perek, but we will see the ending of their last dynasty and then the series of rebellions and problems that will come to them. And there will be many lessons to be learned from that. So it starts off in Pasuk Aleph, Bishnat Eshvim Vasheva Shana Le'Yeravam Melech Yisrael, Malach Azariah Venamatziah Melech Yehuda. So we start with a look at the southern kingdom, but this Azariah is going to have a long reign during which much will happen in the northern kingdom. So it's in the 27th year of Yeravam. So Azariah Venamatziah is taking power. Ben Sheshesre Shana Hayav Bolcho, V'chamishim Shalayim Shana Malach B'Yushalayim, V'shemimo Yechaliyahu Mi'Yushalayim. So he's 16 when he takes over power. So this is a problem for the chronology here is a problem. Rashi and Radak go back and forth on it. You'll remember that Rashi had been of the opinion that Amatziah had not ruled for his last 15 years because he had been in Lachish avoiding the rebellion, and that Azariah had already taken rule then. So he would assume that this 16 years is during his father's lifetime, and the Radak thinks that's not true. He thinks that it's 16 when he starts out, and he doesn't think there was any point at which Amatziah stayed in Lachish, and therefore the chronologies have to get worked out, and they're not so simple to work out. So Rashi and Radak both work on that issue. So part of the problem is that it should have been in the 14th year of Yeravam that Uzziyahu, that Azariah, took power. So the Radak suggests that it's counting from the end of his reign, but it's not clear how he gets that. He just sort of seems to assume that's what it is because the numbers otherwise don't work out. Another point is going to be about Yotam and how he gets born, so we'll see that later, but we're going to see that here Uzziyahu is going to be afflicted with leprosy, and Yotam will apparently be conceived even while his father was already so afflicted. And Chazal actually derived from there a halachic principle that if a person is afflicted with leprosy, that person is nonetheless allowed to continue living with his wife. And Chazal assumed that the requirement to be badad yeshev, to sit alone, is when the leprosy has already gone and he is counting days to be fully healed. But as long as he still has it, so Chazal seemed to assume that he's allowed to continue his relations with his wife. But that's the complications of Uzziyahu. But now that we know that he's afflicted with leprosy, and we'll see it in a second, let's look at Pesukim Gimel through Hey, and we'll see an odd thing. Vayaseh Yashar b'nei Hashem, kol asher asah Amatziah aviv, he does what's right in the eyes of God, like his father Amatziah had done. Rak ha'bamot lo sar, v'odam mizavchim v'kadri b'bamot. We previously noted that in the southern kingdom, you've got the bamot, and yet you can be considered largely good, because the bamot are for Hashem, presumably. And in the northern kingdom, you have the chita'ot of Yeravam, drawing the people away from the Mikdash in particular, and that means that you're generally bad, even if nothing else is bad. So the definition of good and bad can hinge on a significant thing, but only one thing, meaning to observers it might be that the kings of the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom were largely the same. They continued what was there beforehand. They didn't do revolutions in their culture. In the northern kingdom, the culture was to have these two golden calves in Shamron and in Dan, and to use them as ways to sacrifice to God. And in the southern kingdom, the culture was to have Bamot outside of Yerushalayim, and not including the Beit HaMikdash, and sacrifice on them to God. And yet, one, the Navi consistently says he was generally good, but he has the Bamot, a sad thing. And the other, the Navi says he was generally bad, following the Chatot of Yeravam. So one or two crucial choices can certainly change our general judgment of a person. Then if I was like, hey, in this case, it even gets more serious than that, or more striking than that. Hashem strikes the king with leprosy. So Yotam takes over towards the end of his father's kingdom. So we've seen before the idea of it, because his father is sitting b'veitach hafshit. So b'veitach hafshit, Rashi and Radak and Chazal understand it to mean the place where you are free. So what kind of freedom did the king need to have? It's the freedom of the work of kingship. So we live in a democracy, we in America live in a democracy, and we therefore assume that kingship is a bad thing, and we see it as just the king having power and using his power for whatever pleases him. And there may have been times in history when kings treated the monarchy that way. But for in ancient times, and probably also in early medieval times, probably maybe even middle and late medieval times, kings didn't see it that way. They saw the kingship as a trust, as a fiduciary responsibility, as a requirement to help the people out. So it was a labor, it was a work, it was an avodah. And so Beit HaChofshit is, once Azariah gets his affliction with Tzara'an, he is taken away from kingship. Some will see that as pure punishment. So the Pasuk is sort of indicating to us that there is some advantage to this as well, that he is freed of his responsibilities as king. Also strikes Chazal's understanding, and Divrei Hayamim is telling us that the reason that he was struck with leprosy was that he decided to enter the Beit HaMikdash where only the Kohanim were supposed to go. He wanted to offer Ketoret on the altar, on the Mizbeach, which is only allowed for Kohanim, for priests. So, and there's a whole discussion that this is similar to what Moshe had been told, that Moshe, and that's why Moshe was struck with leprosy on his hand, to teach him this lesson that if you try to do what the priests are supposed to do, you'll be struck with leprosy, and that's what happens to Azariah. So, should be remarkable that here you have a king who sometime toward the end of his life had arrogated to himself the right to serve as a Kohen, even though he's not allowed to, and he enters the Beit HaMikdash, he gets his punishment, he is removed from kingship for it, and yet the Pesach can still consider him generally okay, generally a good king, following the ways of Amatzia's forefather. Another example of what I was just saying before, that our definition of good and evil, or the Nach's definition of good and evil, hinges here on crucial issues and crucial questions, but might not be, and might not therefore mean what we would call good and evil. We would see this person, we might think he has significant problems, significant flaws in the way he handles himself. But because he aligns with the right sides on the major central issues of concern, namely the question of, are we able to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is who must be followed? And as long as we can do that, and we don't rebel against the Beit HaMikdash, and we don't try to circumvent the Beit HaMikdash, then we're going to be considered good by the Pesukim. Pasuk Vav, V'yet Divrei Azariah V'chol Asher Asa Lo, Yimtu B'mosev Divrei Mim L'machi Yudah. The history is in the history book. The history of Azariah, like all the others, is in the history books. V'yishkav Azariah M'avotav, V'yigru Otoy M'avotav B'yir Davi. He passes away, and he is buried, and now his son Yotam takes over the kingship fully. But there's 52 years of a kingship here, so there's going to be several northern kingdom kings to learn about. So in Pasuk Chet, Bishnat 38 Shana, Azariah Melech Yehuda, Malach Zechariah ben Yerav'am al Yisrael, v'shamot shisha chodeshim. Takes his man Zechariah, Yerav'am's son, he takes this throne for 6 months. V'yasara b'nei Hashem, and he does evil, and he does like what his forefathers did, which means in the northern kingdom's case that he doesn't leave, he doesn't have the ability to understand that the basic fundamental flaw in the northern kingdom is that they have rejected the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore he continues those sins. So Shalom ben Yavesh rebels against him, he has a rebellion, and he kills him. So Kaval Am means in front of everybody. So this wasn't a rebellion where we have seen people take power before in Malachim by starting out slow and gathering allies and seeing who's on their side and seeing what they can do. In this case, what we're being told is that he just went at him right in public, right from the beginning, and he had a very immediate taking over of the throne, and he takes over the throne. Another thing we should see the difference between, or notice again the difference between the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom, in that the Southern Kingdom, we have rebellions, but in those rebellions, as we've said before, in those rebellions, the throne is left in the hands of the house of David, and nobody fights against that. The question is who is appropriate to be king. So here to give an example of that, Shalom and Yavesh are taking over the king. The rest of what he does is written in the history books of Melchai Yisrael, and the Pasuk notes in Yud Bet, Hu Divar Hashem Hashem Divar Yehu Leimor B'nei Revi'im Yeshvu Lechal Kisei Yisrael Vayichein. So the point, as Radak notes, is the point of Zechariah's ruling, if it's only going to be 6 months, is that God had a promise to Yehu that he needed to fulfill. And even if it was only 6 months, it was true that four generations had sat on the throne of the northern kingdom for Zechariah, as Hashem had promised Yehu. one of the things the Radak points out that we might skip over if we weren't paying attention is that he says this is only because they were evil. Had they been good, had they behaved properly, had they reacted appropriately, whatever the right way of saying it is, then Radak points out, then they might have succeeded better and had longer on the throne. So it wasn't Hashem said you're only going to have four generations. It was Hashem said you're going to have at least four generations. They acted wrongly, and then Hashem limited it to the four generations. But that was not a necessary outcome. It was the outcome as it went. He only lasts for a month. In Shamron, this Shalom and Yavesh, in the 39th year of Uzziah, Vayal Menachem ben Gadi mitirtza, so he comes from Tirtza, which was a city we've seen before as being one where they might object to, or they might try to resist, or they have a competing power source, a power, seat of power in Tirtza. Vayavo Shamron, Vayachet Shalom ben Yavesh b'Shamron. So he comes up and he goes to Shamron and he kills Shalom and Yavesh and he takes over the throne. We had Divrei Shalom, Vikishro Asher Kashash, so Shalom is only king for a month. The Pesach doesn't have enough time to do anything because the Pesach just says the rest of what he did, including the rebellion, Hinam Ketuvim, I'll save Divrei Malkei Yisrael. He doesn't make much in the history books other than being recorded as the one who had done this rebellion against Zechariah. Okay. So Menachem, who becomes the new king, now he destroys a city. The Radak thinks it's not a Jewish city, but it was right across the border from Tirtza, where he had his seat of power. And so he beats Tifsach, v'kol shevad, v'gulah mitirtza, ki lo patach, v'yachet kol he'aroteha bikeya. So because it doesn't open up, he destroys it, he kills it, and they note that he also kills all of its pregnant women, all the pregnant women in Tifsach. I haven't seen a lot of discussion of why we bother to mention that he kills all the pregnant women, but you may remember that Elisha, when he was talking to Hazael, the king of Aram, had cried because he had noted the particular cruelty that would happen, that Hazael would eventually attack and destroy Jewish strongholds, Jewish people, and Jewish idea things, and so he cries about that, Elisha, and when he wants to give an example of what the cruelty would be like, he says, and you're gonna kill the pregnant women, you're gonna tear open the stomachs of the pregnant women. So it's perhaps showing here that this Menachem, who has designs on cities outside of Eretz Israel, who's coming from a different city than Shamron, that maybe he has absorbed some of the cruelty that he would have seen in Aram. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Bishnash Loshim Atesh Shanal Azayam Melech Yehuda, Malach Menachem Ben Gadil Yisrael, Eser Shanim Bishamron. So this Menachem lasts for 10 years, which is a relatively long time in this context. In these years of Shamron, we don't have a lot of stability in the kingship. He too follows the ways of Yeravam. The Gemara in Sanhedrin assumes that Ful is another name for Sancheiriv, who will eventually destroy the northern kingdom and almost destroy the southern kingdom, almost destroy Malchut Yehuda. So he already comes now, at this point, which is some years before it's going to be actually destroyed, and he comes to attack the land, but Menachem buys him off with 1,000 talents of silver, 1,000 coins, talents, whatever the measures of silver, in order for him to, instead of defeating him, to join him and to strengthen him in the kingship. So he doesn't have the money himself, so he makes a tax of it. Pay 50, and then if you have 20 of them, you get to 50 times 20 is 1,000. So that's what happens. So the king of Ashur takes the money, but he doesn't stay there. He just goes. And the rest of what Menachem had done, everything he did, that's written in the history books of the kings of Israel. So now he passes away. We've already now met the seeds of destruction, meaning the figure who will eventually destroy the northern kingdom has been met. We've seen him, And now Menachem passes away, and we move on to Pekachyahu, his son. He only lasts for 2 years. This Pekachyahu is the son of this Menachem. And he too follows all of the sins of Yeravam. So now there's going to be a rebellion again. Worth noticing that in the northern kingdom you have many more rebellions than in the southern kingdom, perhaps because rebellion was rewarded, if you were successful, was rewarded with the throne, whereas in the southern kingdom it was not. So that might have been a factor in that. So he rebels against him, and he kills him, right? And the pasuk says he kills him et argov ve'et ha'aryeh. So the Radak, perhaps being the rationalist that he is, says that meaning he had two people with the name Argov and the Aryeh, but Rashi thinks that Argov is the language of a palace, of an important building, an important structure, and Aryeh means a golden lion, so that it's not talking about his sons, but that he struck him perhaps in order to get or to take possession of the valuable physical possessions that he had, monetary possessions that he has. So he kills him with his 50. He has 50 courageous men, 50 soldiers, 50 warriors, and he takes over the throne. And the rest of Pekachyah, you can go and find out if you want to in the book. I mean, you can't nowadays. But that's what the Navi is telling us. The Navi is telling us it's not important enough for us to tell you here. We've told you all you need to know. Let's move on. Now we have 20 years. This is really very close to the end of the northern kingdom of Malchut Yisrael. So he's got 20 years of relative stability. But he continues in the ways of Yeravam ben Nevat. You never have a rest from this. You never have anybody coming to realize that there is a fundamental flaw in the northern kingdom. And that, I think, is what really is their doom, is that they never are able to realize it. In the southern kingdom, in Malchut Yehuda, we're going to see that they also have significant flaws, but we've already had Yoash was one, and we're going to have a couple of others come to realize it and sort of put stopgaps, at least, in the descent into destruction. So here, you don't have that. Everybody's following this path. Bimei, Pazuk Haftet, Bimei Pekach Menelach Yisrael, Batiglat Pileser, another name according to Chazal for Sancheiriv, this Tiglat Pileser, the king of Ashur, Melech Ashur, Ve'ekach et Yon, Ve'tavel Beit Ma'achav, Ve'yenoch, Ve'tkedesh, Ve'chatzor, Ve'tagilad, Ve'tagalila, Kol Eretz Nafli, Ve'yaglim Ashura. He takes significant portions of Eretz Israel, of the northern kingdom. It's described as being the land of Naphtali, and he already exiles them to Ashur. So we might have hoped, this is just a recurring theme both in this Sefer and also in Jewish history in general. You might hope that the coming of evil and of destruction and of problems would lead people to reconsider their choices, to reconsider their view of the world, to maybe come to realize that they have significant problems that they need to be dealing with, that they need to be handling and revising their method for dealing with, but we see none of that here. So you've got the northern kingdom is already losing some of its citizens, losing some of its land to Ashur, and people are being exiled, and yet it's not going to do anything. So, Pasuk Lamed Vayikshor Kesher, another rebellion. Hoshea ben Elal, Pekach ben Remaliyahu, Vayikehu Vayimidehu, he strikes him and he kills him, Vayiloch Tachtav, in the 20th year. Vishnat Asim Lutam ben Uziyahu, Vietu Divrei Pekach, Kol Asher. So, the rest of Pekach's rule is summarized in and discussed in. So, in all these rebellions, though, of course, part of what the Pasuk is noting for us is that the cause of the rebellion, or the underlying interest in the rebellion, was not an objection to the path of Yeravam ben Nevat. That's why each king continues that path. It's something else that's going on in these rebellions, and that's part of the tragedy here. That there's a lot of rebellion, there's a lot of seeking change, but and a lot of recognition that they weren't going the right way, but none of that focuses on the essential issue, on the crucial issue. And that's sort of the tragic part of the northern kingdom's downfall. Pasuk Lamed Bet, Bishnat Shtayim Vekav Remayel, Melech Yisrael, Malach Yotam Ben Uziyahu, Melech Yehuda. So now we're turning because we've had a bunch of kings in the 52 years of Uziyahu's rule. Now it's time to turn back to Yotam. Something that I think I've commented on before, but to mention again, that to notice that we always refer the two kingdoms to each other, because for all that they may have seen themselves as separate, I think there's a message being sent to us that we're supposed to recognize that they weren't nearly as separate as they think they were, so that all the events in one are related to, or the changes of rain in one are always reflected or spoken of in terms of the reign of the other kingdom. Then Esfim v'chamesh shana hayav melcho, he was 25 when he ruled, when he took over. V'sheish esfei shana melach b'Yerushalayim, v'sheimimo Yerusha bat Tzadok, and his mother is Yerusha bat Tzadok. V'yasa yashar b'nei Hashem, he does what's right in Hashem's eyes. Kol asher asa Uziyahu aviv asa, like his father Uziyahu. Uziyahu, of course, being the person who had been stricken with leprosy, in Yerushalayim's words, because he tried to be a king and tried to be a kohen and offer ketoron on the altar. Nonetheless, he was good. Pasuk Lamed Hey, Rakav Bamot Lo Saru Od Ham Mizabchim VeKatrim Bamot, who bana et Shar Beit Hashem Elyon, and he builds this, he either builds or rebuilds this upper area in the this upper gate in the house of the king, the place between the king's palace and the Beit HaMikdash. And so the Radak says it's either that he rebuilt it or that he built it to begin with, and they had never, there was a new structure. V'yet divrei Yotam asher asa halohem ketuvim haseh v'divrei Yamin Malach Yehuda, the rest of what he did is in the book of divrei Yamin Malach Yehuda. V'yamim ahem hechel Hashem lashliach b'Yehuda ritzin melach Aram v'pekach ben Remaliyahu. And now the southern kingdom is also beginning to suffer military losses. They've done that before, but now I think it's sort of hinting at the possibility that destruction is close on its way. Just as we saw in the northern kingdom that Sancheriv came and exiled Naphtali. So here too, we see that in the time of Yotam, we already have the beginnings of military losses. Vayishkav Yotam Yivotav, Vayikavir Yivotav, Yer David, Aviv Vayimloch, Achaz Beno Tachtav. So his son Achaz is going to take over, and we will meet Achaz more in the next parak, a strikingly terrible king with little sort of explanatory or exculpatory information, but that'll be for the next parak, for parak to Zion. One last thing to point out here. It's sort of a relatively long parak that I've done fairly quickly. Part of the reason to do it quickly is that it's just a series of bad kings for Malchei Yisrael, and we see the pattern, and there's no point in belaboring it. We've seen the major issues. But one last issue that I would point out, just to notice, is that the book of Yeshayahu opens up by telling us that Yeshayahu was a Navi, was a Chose. He has a Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz, Asher Chazal Yudah Yerushalayim, Bimei Uziyahu Yotam Achaz Yechizkiyahu. He started out in the time of Uziyahu, he went through all of Yotam, and then Achaz, and then Chizkiyahu. So we are just getting to Achaz, for we've already had Uziyahu and Yotam. So Uziyahu was 52 years, and Yotam was 25 years. So you might argue that some of Yotam's time is swallowed up in Uziyahu's time. It's not clear how much of the time, but it's somewhere around 50 or 70 years in already. They've ruled together. So if you cut it down, and you think that Yeshayahu was only a Navi for 40 years, right there, 16 years of Achaz, and then he's going to have all the years of Chizkiyahu. So there's a whole discussion about how you put all those years together of Yeshayahu. But it's, I think, interesting that we don't meet Yeshayahu in the book of Melachim until well into Chizkiyahu's reign. Chizkiyahu's reign is 29 years. So maybe Yeshayahu was more than 40. Maybe I got that wrong, but it's a long time that he's prophesying. So even if you take him in the last year of Uziyahu, and he's got 25 years of Yotam, it's still true that we don't meet him here in the book of Malachim. And that perhaps captures one of the problems in this whole time period, right? We've met Eliyahu and Elisha at length, but other prophets not so much at length, certainly not since the time of Rechavam, just after Shlomo had passed away. We don't meet so many other Nevi'im, and here we know of a very important Navi, and we know he's giving out Nevuot, and yet it would seem, even in the southern kingdom, it's not having that much of an impact because it doesn't get mentioned here. It's not significant to these kings. We'll see it in Chizkiyahu, it will become significant, but not in the others. So that's perhaps the lesson of this parak, to realize that Isaiah has come into power, and you have this northern kingdom spiraling down into destruction and exile. You have the southern kingdom spiraling down, which will be averted only at the last minute, but spiraling down as well, and you have Nevi'im talking about it, and you have the people ignoring them as they speak, so that they don't even make it into the book, even into the book of Malachim Bet. A striking lesson for our times. Have a great day.